The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features ensure that you can take on any adventure. What kind of features? Well, how about the available H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud? Or the standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together? How about available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone? We're always trying to think about those great spring and summer getaways, but with a car like the Hyundai Santa Fe, anywhere can be your next adventure. To learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe, go to HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for complete details. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson, Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott. It's your call for the best college football coverage, from National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Bud Elliott. That's Tom Fornelli. That's Danny Cannell. I'm Chip Patterson. A lot to get to today, mostly looking at our preseason predictions, some of our preseason prognostications. What do we feel good about? Where were we wrong after 2 weeks? Yes, that is absolutely overreaction territory, but I would say that we have some evidence already that suggests that some of our preseason hunches are wrong. And we've also seen some evidence already that says, hey, we might have been ahead of the curve on something, injuries and others aspects to that as well. We're going to dive into a lot of that. Plus, Bud hit you with that instant reaction, including some of the top candidates for replacing Clay Helton at USC. We want to open up the table before we get out of here and be able to just get everyone's sense of where we're at with this job, what our expectations are for the search, something that honestly is going to be a conversation for the entire season, at least until what? December, unless they go hire Bob Stoops or Chris Peterson like next week and just let him, go ahead and get started right away. But we'll get into all that just a little bit later. So for those of you who enjoyed the Win Totals Locks podcast, and many, many of you did, if you're watching on youtube.com/cover3, we'll be able to call up the Locks doc so that we can analyze this. And if it's okay with y'all, I wanted to start with some of the teams that we had either agreements, disagreements, the picks that had everybody involved. So I want to begin with the NC State Wolfpack. We were in total lock infinity on the NC State over 6. We had lock infinity on the Vanderbilt over 3. Now, NC State is off to a 1-1 start. Vanderbilt also off to a 1-1 start. The Commodores picking up a win against Colorado State after losing its FCS opener. NC State blowing USF out of the water, then following that up with an egg being laid against Mississippi State the following week. So since all four of us are involved in these two picks, which one do you feel more confident about? We need wins in both categories. We need NC State to not let this loss define the Wolfpack season. Let one loss become two, as the saying goes. And for Vanderbilt, giving up the FCS game was not part of my calculations. So which one of these two, NC State or Vanderbilt, are we feeling better about as we proceed in week 3 and beyond?
It's easy, right? I mean, this is really Vanderbilt. Simple exercise.
It's Vanderbilt.
Oh, really? It's Vanderbilt? You feel better about that?
You're just kidding.
They do have UConn. UConn's a lock, so they got two. Then all you need is one more.
It starts Saturday night with David Shaw and Stanford in a letdown spot.
100%. Yeah. And I don't know, we overreact to upsets, and clearly USC was overreaction central with firing Clay Helton. I think it was just they wanted to do that. They found the opportunity. In Jacksonville State being Florida State, it's awful. Toledo almost beaten. And then you're like, oh, this team's no good. Teams play down all the time. It happens. Bad games happen. how do you still feel at the root? Like, Vanderbilt, it's in Nashville. Maybe they're fired up. Maybe they come out and play with some more confidence. I'm not completely sold that they don't have a chance in this game. But as far as this question goes, I still feel really good about NC State. When you circled this game, this schedule at the beginning of the season, I think we probably would have pegged Mississippi State as a toss-up game. I don't think that's a game any of us said, oh, yeah, that's a win, like chalk it up. I still think NC State's going to make their hay in the against the ACC opponents.
I agree with Danny on that point. I have NC State power rated pretty similarly to what I had, you know, power rated prior, right? Maybe more of like a top 30-ish team than a top 20 team, but not a massive downgrade. They outgained Mississippi State on a yards per play perspective. They did not execute on passing downs, which was really their death knell in that game, like a 0% success rate for a lot of the game when they got behind the stick. So I was disappointed in how Tim Beck and his offense there played that for NC State. I thought they would take a step forward so far in the passing game. I haven't seen it. They also gave up a kick return touchdown, which good job.
Open the game. Which if you, game. Yeah, and if you believe in the voodoo and the hoodoo of NC State stuff, and the way they say it around here, they have another word for stuff. It's like, that's what you do. You trip and fall on your face. It is Charlie Brown in the football. It is stepping on the rake. Like, in these spots, NC State does not have a lot of experience. In fact, the one game that NC State can hold its hat on for the Dave Doran era is when Notre Dame came in the middle of an actual hurricane.
This is Brian Kelly hurricane game. Yeah,
Brian Kelly actually decided to throw the ball 40 times in the middle of a hurricane, and NC State was able to win, I think, 7-3. And that is like the most high profile non-conference victory for NC State in the Dave Doran era.
Now, the one reason why I'm much more confident in NC State, other than the fact that Vandy did blow it to an FCS team, which they almost certainly had to win if they're going to hit this over. I think Vandy could still push.
Correct.
They're not going to go over, I don't think, with an FCS loss. Which of these teams I'm about to read off on NC State's schedule do you feel are better than we thought they were in the preseason? Clemson, Louisiana Tech, Boston College, who, by the way, I don't know if you guys saw it. I think we talked about it on yesterday's episode. Phil Jurkovec is out most likely for the year, but definitely for a while. And the backup, I did get some DMs on this. It's pronounced Grossell. So I guess we got some official clarification on that.
So he's like an immune system. He grows cells.
He is growing cells.
Yep.
Miami, Louisville, Florida State, Wake Forest, which we'll talk about in a little bit, Syracuse, and North Carolina. Are any of those teams on NC State's schedule looking better than they did in the preseason?
No.
No. So I've actually increased my win projection for NC State, despite the fact that they lost to Mississippi State. I think this schedule just got a whole lot easier based on what we've seen.
Yeah, like the reason I was on NC State before the season was I projected them to be closer to 8 wins than 6. So it seemed like a really obvious play for me. And this Mississippi State loss was not entirely, as far as my calculations were concerned, this was very much well within the likely range of outcomes when I took the over. So I'm not really deterred by that NC State loss. Whereas with Vandy, like, East Tennessee State was one of the wins. So as soon as they lost that game, that win total became in jeopardy. But I don't think, like Bud says, I think they could still push. And I think this week's game against Stanford will be huge. But, you know, they still get UConn coming up. At South Carolina doesn't look like it's going to be an incredibly difficult game because South Carolina has not looked particularly impressive. And so, I mean, I still think there's a decent chance they can get to 3 and maybe 4 if they beat Stanford this week.
4 is tougher, but yeah, I mean, I could see it. I could see 3 if they can pull a win off against Stanford. They have to travel to Tennessee end of the year. Who knows what Tennessee looks like then, I guess.
We shall see. Our boy Chip booted out of StreamYard. We'll effort to get him back. Do you guys have a spreadsheet up that you can see? Because I do not.
I do.
Yeah.
Tom, you want to take it? I know Chip wanted to go over some lock fights and lock agreements that we had. I think we hit the agreements first.
Well, we did lock Infinity, so we'll move to the lock unities instead. How are we feeling about Illinois over 3.5 following Illinois' losses to UTSA and Virginia?
Neutral, basically. I had them projected to go 1-2 in that stretch, and I still bet the over. So, about neutral. I mean, I kind of thought they would beat UTSA and lose to Nebraska, but I didn't think they were going to go on the road and beat UVA.
I'm with you. I thought 1-1 is about where they would split these couple games. I thought they'd be 1-2, the same spot. I think I'll be able to tell you a lot more after I see Virginia this weekend in North Carolina. Virginia, because I think Virginia is pretty good. Like, I watched the game was the early kick, 11 a.m. kick, so I got to see a lot of it. Brandon Armstrong looked really solid. Like, this UVA team might have been a team that everybody's sleeping on. We saw Virginia Tech, what they did. If they can play tight with North Carolina, and if they beat them, then all of a sudden you're thinking, man, like, it's not that awful of a loss for Illinois. So I still feel probably the same way I did before about Illinois.
I will say, like, what I don't know how Virginia is going to do as far as its final record at the end of the season, but if you're looking for a team that's going to be fun to watch all year, Virginia is going to be like a good time. You're going to enjoy watching Virginia games. They do some really fun stuff. I'm kind of with you guys. I'm not completely jumping off ship here. The UTSA win would have obviously been a huge boost to us after they beat Nebraska to start the year. But if you look at the Big Ten and how things have gone, I mean, they've still got a game against Charlotte coming up in early October, which I would think Illinois is probably going to win, although I'm not going to give it to them. I think Maryland on Friday night is winnable, although I'm not incredibly optimistic about it. But Brandon Peters is back and is starting. And then there is the Rutgers game, and Rutgers is 2-0. But as we've gone over, it's not like they've looked like a dynamite team while doing so. They've just been in some funky situations. And you look at the big rest of the Big Ten West, it's like the Wisconsin-Penn State games. No, those aren't happening. But neither is Iowa on the road in all likelihood. But Northwestern at the end of the year is a game that Illinois has had a lot of difficulty with in recent seasons. But from what we've seen of Northwestern so far this year, it doesn't strike me as a game Illinois can't win. So I'm not totally out on our chances there.
And, you know, Minnesota's a dog at Colorado. Like, I wouldn't also not put Minnesota in the unwinnable category, right? Like Minnesota has not shown me they were really good in 2019. They have not, over like the last year and so far this year, they haven't shown me that they're like a team that can be trusted. Really, Illinois could beat Minnesota. I'm not saying they'll be favored, but it's possible. Hey, Chip, when you were gone, we looked over the NC State schedule and we asked, do any of these teams look better on the remaining schedule than they did in the preseason? Is Chip frozen?
I think so. Yeah. That or he's really in deep pontification.
Hell of a deep thought.
That is a great grab right there.
Yeah.
Our other lock unity on the win totals was the Auburn under 7.5. Auburn is now off to a 2-0 start. It beat the hell out of Akron, was it? Yeah, it put up 60 on Akron. Last week, it played Alabama State beat them 62-0. So this is an Auburn offense that is basically averaging 61 points per game. Are they an unstoppable juggernaut? Is our under doomed, bud?
Papa, can I just reveal to the listeners a little text that we got to the group thread that said, hey, guys, I think Auburn might be good. Was that it or was it their offense might be good? I forget the specifics to the crew, but Bud was one of the ones who was more negative on Auburn. Are you having second thoughts?
No. Because Auburn had like 10 yards of play against Akron's defense, and they looked pretty buttoned up. And it's like, oh, that's cool. And then Temple went to Akron last weekend with its backup quarterback and had 8 yards of play. So I'm like, okay. So Akron on the plains allows 10 yards of play. Akron at home to Temple's backup allows 8 yards of play. If you have changed your opinion materially on Auburn after two games against Akron and an FCS team, I really want to know why. Like, to me, this just remains completely neutral. The only opinion that would have changed is that they had totally struggled against Auburn or against Akron, and I would have said, this is kind of funky. The remainder of their schedule is sort of up in the air to me. So at LSU looks much more winnable than it was. We talked yesterday on the live mailbag about how LSU is flying under the radar right now because of who they played last week, but they only had 4.6 yards of play against McNeese State. Like, that, I don't think it's going to end well for Orgeron there this year if they don't get things fixed in a big way. That offense is not looking good. But at Arkansas now looks more difficult than it did prior, and they got to go play that game right after they play Georgia. At A&M, who knows if Haynes King is back. But I still feel that 7-5 is more likely than 8-4 here.
Yeah, no, I agree. There's like everybody baked in the wins over Akron and Alabama State when they were still coming up the center. I think we're going to have a much better idea of what Auburn is on Saturday night. Like if they go to Penn State and they win that game, or they just look really strong in a loss, then it's like, okay, this might be a team that's going to be capable of getting date wins. But if they go up there and they just don't look very good, and you look at Penn State in comparison to a lot of the teams that are left on their schedule, I think it's fair to assume they'll probably struggle quite a bit down the stretch.
I think that's fair. Where do you want to go now, Tom?
How about our, we can go to our lock fight.
Yes.
You're on the Bowling Green over 1.5. I am on the Bowling Green under 1.5. Convince me right now that I haven't already won this.
Okay. I did not think that Bowling Green was going to beat Tennessee or South Alabama. But Bowling Green put together you got to celebrate the small wins here if you're Bowling Green. Bowling Green had multiple drives against Tennessee where they had more than 2 first downs in a drive.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's a victory for Bowling Green. They were absolutely terrible last year. They also played South Alabama to within a field goal, which means they covered, right? Like they're so far, Bowling Green is 2-0 against the spread. They are better than I thought they would be. And I'm saying that as somebody who bet they're over. I really need them to get this Murray State game this weekend. If they drop Murray State, Tom wins, basically.
Yeah, it's the game of the week.
It is.
As far as I'm concerned. No, I'm kind of with you. I'm worried about this one because, like you said, I do think that the Bowling Green that I've seen through the first 2 weeks, they're not good, but they look better than they did last year.
They're not, sure. They're not in serious consideration for worst team in the country.
They're a bad team, but they're like a bad team that's capable of beating other bad teams. Whereas the last few years, like you said, it's like there wasn't anybody I was going to pick Bowling Green to beat. Like even if they were playing Murray State, I'd be like, I don't know. That's really not something I'm just going to give them. But you look at the schedule, I think they should beat Murray State this week. At Minnesota on the road is tough. At Kent's tough. That Akron game at home is suddenly looking very scary to me because Akron, from what I've seen through the first 2 weeks, just looking at the numbers, when I say seen, I don't mean I've been sitting there grinding Akron film. But like, this is a Akron team that strikes me as being capable of being very bad and might be that worst team in the nation come the end of the season.
Yeah, there's like 5 teams right now that I think could be the worst team in the nation, right? UConn, New Mexico State, Akron. Who are there 2 I'm missing? I know I'm missing a couple here.
Kansas?
I think Kansas, Florida State, of course. Kansas, I think with the quarterback that can run around, they're elevated. So far, my ratings absolutely hate Navy, but I think Navy will turn around. But like Akron, New Mexico State, UConn.
I don't know either.
I think there's
Louisiana Monroe could be sneaky really, really bad. So that's like 4. UMass has also looked a little bit better. Old Dominion could be really, really bad. But like I just think Bowling Green is more like the 120th team rather than 130th. And Chip would probably be killing us right now if he heard us talking about Bowling Green for like 8 minutes. But
we'll make this a VOD. It'll be great.
I want to submit that to the PAs and just see what they do.
All right, Isaac,
you gonna call me?
Danny, you've got a lock agreement with Bud on the Miami under 9.5. Like after seeing Miami get blasted by Alabama and seeing them struggle to get by App State last week, I assume you're feeling pretty good about that one.
I am, but on the flip side, I think the play was you go UNC over, Miami under, and at a game when I pegged as a loss for Miami going to Chapel Hill October 16th, that game, I think Miami, like I feel a little bit better about their chances of possibly beating the Tar Heels there. Like, and again, the first 2 games I think played out probably the way you would think. Like, did not think they would beat Alabama. And then actually, if you really dove deep and thought about it, you would expect a letdown game against App State, right? Like, this is one of those ones. So, like, that wasn't surprising. Looking at what else is there, you know, maybe that's the only concern. Yeah, I feel pretty good about it right now. But Pitt, like, that Pitt game is going to be tough for them. So, yeah, I feel better about the under for Miami, but still not, like, ready to cash in on it just yet.
But you're with them. I'm assuming you're agreeing for the most part.
I actually did play both North Carolina and Miami under.
So did I. I think I did too. I don't know if I did it on our official, but that's kind of the take.
I just think that like they're not that far above the rest of the ACC. Personally, I Yeah, I mean, Danny, they could lose to Michigan State this weekend. That line is, you know, is under a touchdown. I mean, I have Miami as single-digit favorites against Michigan State, Virginia, obviously North Carolina will be a slight dog. NC State at Pitt, they could be a dog. I have them double digits against Georgia Tech. I had them like borderline double digits at FSU, and then single digits again against VaTech at home. And then they go to Duke to end the year. And look, recently they've owned Duke, but in previous years when Miami collapses, we've seen them lose at Duke. But I don't think they'll lose to Duke. Yeah, I'm still there. What was our number, 9 or 9.5?
Danny,
oh, 9.5. Yeah. That this is
I went right over now, North Carolina.
Yeah, I'm projecting them 7.9 right now, so that's basically 8. I feel pretty good about this one. It's my fourth most confident to get to the window of my locks right now.
Yeah, well, how about this one? Because you just mentioned them, they're playing Miami this week. You've got the over 4.5 on Michigan State. Game, is that one of your more confident plays at this point?
Yeah, and I've got them at 6.7. I just think they're better than a lot of these Big Ten teams. I think Michigan State, Mel Tucker had them in a tough spot in negotiations, and he basically says, show me the money. I want a huge recruiting staff. I want a huge off-field staff. Give me all these ex-analysts. I want what Kirby and Nick have since he coached for them. He kind of knows how those organizations run and what Jimbo has at A&M now. He's a resource hog, but he puts it to good use. And like he demands a lot, but he's getting a lot out of his kids so far. They've actually scored on the opening play of both games, and they're coming out hot. He's not one of these stodgy defensive coaches right now. I think he's actually doing a really good job. I mean, tell me the remaining game they can't win other than Ohio State.
There isn't one, honestly. Like they can beat Indiana on the road. They could beat Michigan at home. They can beat Penn State at home to finish the year. I agree. I don't think they're beating Ohio State. But again, we're going to have to see how Ohio State looks. Like, you know, coming off that loss, if they don't figure things out on that side of the ball, this is an Ohio State team that could be beatable by Michigan State at the end of the year. Moving on to
cash this before Halloween?
Oh, they might, honestly. Because if they beat Miami on Saturday, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's just sports books could probably, you know, if they offer cash out, they should probably just offer you the full cash out at that point if they beat Miami on Saturday.
Gives you a chance to lose it back to them.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. See, that's forward thinking. That's why
books do that. Yeah.
But here's a win total that you and I, Bud, are in a lock agreement on that I don't feel great about at all after the Skylar Thompson injury. The Kansas State over 5.5. I was feeling so good watching them in week one just take it to Stanford, beating them 24-7. I was practically spending the money on that ticket already. And then Skylar Thompson gets hurt. They barely scraped by Southern Illinois. They've got Nevada this week, a road trip to Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, and then Iowa State all coming in the next 3 weeks or 4 weeks. There's a bye in there. But those are their next three games. And maybe they could beat Oklahoma State. I don't think they're beating Nevada this week because I think that Nevada's got a huge advantage at the QB position. I mean, we're talking about a team that could be 2-4 come mid-October, and we're going to need them to win four of their final six games down the stretch.
Yeah, and Tom, I think we had the right side. I really do, you know.
Damn and fate.
Quarterback injuries obviously hurt us. In that game against Southern Illinois after Skylar Thompson went down, I was like, man, maybe Will Howard's gotten better. He was kind of thrown into the fire last year. That was a tough spot. Mm-mm. 8 of 17 for 76 yards and a pick. eight rushes for 9 yards. I think they went like, I've got him at 5.2 now, you know, which is a pretty big downgrade because before I had him at like 6.2. So that like losing Howard to me is like a full win different. And that's probably the difference.
I've got one. Can I give one? I can.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Basically, oh, yeah. I've got a 6 dealer has face card. I hate when people surrender, but I kind of want to surrender. Alabama, I took under 11.5 thinking surely there's a slip up in there somewhere. Well, the slip ups I thought were potential slip ups. Gainesville this weekend, not loving the Emory Jones experiment so far. Don't feel great about that. College Station, not feeling great about that with Haynes King lost, Zach Calzada in. Kind of in shambles offensively for the Aggies. The Iron Bowl is still in play, but we don't know what that's going to look like. Like, yeah, it's a rivalry game, but I don't think that's going to be the loss. Baton Rouge, LSU, like after what we've seen early, I'm ready to just surrender. Can I get half my money back if I just get out of this now? I just think the Tide, never doubt them again. Like, as crazy as it is, I don't know. I just, you see Nick Saban go off on his team after they waxed Miami. And we got players proposing on the sideline after a worst loss in history. I just think that's why Saban is so great. Like, he reloads. He has his team focused no matter what. I thought a slip-up was in there, but the potential hiccups. Maybe Ole Miss. That was the one that I looked at. Maybe. Like, that's the flyer. But I think the smart money says surrender, get half your bet back, and live another day.
I will say, like, I was on the over in our SEC West win total show. I didn't lock it up. I said Alabama was going to go 12-0. But if I'm you, I understand why you're worried. But I do feel like what I thought was the, maybe not statistically, but just real life, the most realistic loss for them, the one team that I'm really scared of against Alabama, because it's the one team I think can score enough points to compete, it's Ole Miss. Mm-hmm. And from what I've seen from Ole Miss,
they look better.
I still think Ole Miss is capable of maybe pulling off a shocker defensively. We're going to need to see that, you know, continue into the SEC play before that Alabama game. But if I'm you, I still think there is one good shot for them to lose a game.
If that's your worst one, like that's not that bad.
No.
Like, Chip, by the way, texted, he's trying to get back in. But Chip said, we asked him or do we have any more lock unities or lock infinities to go over that are?
We've got Kansas under 1.5, which, I mean, there's no change there. Like, they're 1-1, which is, I think, where both of us expected them to be at this point of the season. And we also, Danny and I are on the Oregon over 9, which I'm feeling pretty strong about, Danny. I don't know if you are after they beat Ohio State. And then you and Danny, Bud and Danny, are agreement on Iowa State under 9.5, which, again, I'm assuming both of you are feeling pretty good about at this point.
Oregon, I think they're like 7-5 or 8-4.
Yeah. The Oregon one is interesting because they still have a road gauntlet to go through still. Mm-hmm. And I know you look at the teams they're playing, but it's just the schedule was the thing that made me nervous. I'm a believer in Oregon, but I also, the Pac-12, are they going to do Pac-12 things? They still have to go to Stanford, which looks much tougher. Granted, we'll see what happens in Nashville this weekend, to UCLA, to Washington, and to Utah. Again, we feel a lot better about all those, except UCLA looks a little bit tougher. I feel great about the pick, but I'm not ready to just cash the ticket just yet. I don't want to gloat too early.
But you know what, though? Like, I look at the rest of the Pac-12 North, and I think that's 5 wins right there. I don't see anybody in that division beating Oregon. I think the North is going to look pretty weak come the end of the season. And I look at the South. USC's already, I mean, they don't play USC, so I guess it doesn't matter, but they've already fired Helton, so they're kind of screwed. But like in the South, they get Arizona, which might be the worst team in the Pac-12. They get Colorado, which respectable, but I don't think that's going to get in Oregon's way, especially since the game's in Eugene. And they get the road trip to Utah, which I think will be difficult because playing road games at Utah are always difficult. And even if Utah is coming off a loss to BYU, I still think that's going to be a tough team. But like the rest of that schedule, man, I don't see any real losses outside of UCLA on the road as a possibility and Utah on the road. The rest of those games, I mean, I know Stanford looked good at USC, but I think that was more USC because that's still the same Stanford that got its butt kicked by Kansas State. So I'm not all that concerned about them in that game. I think this is an Oregon game that's winning 10 games at a minimum.
I have them 10-2, which is still a winner for Danny.
Yeah. Well, Chip is one of the ones he mentioned in the text where, you know, he's
back.
He's back. Oh, there he is.
Well, dicey. Do we got him?
Oh, wait. Has he frozen? Back.
He's not really
no
back.
Way.
He's
just is that just something that happened?
There he is.
If you spend too much time talking nice about Vanderbilt, then Barton's internet will actually. The ghost of Barton's internet find its way into your podcast one way or another. I tell you what, let's have y'all hit the break yet?
No.
Okay. We need the pro to get us to break.
All right. So we've got, did y'all do Illinois, Auburn, Oregon?
Yes.
Yes.
Awesome. Cool. Well, coming up on the other side, Iowa State has taken a loss that could impact that historic win total. Plus
we did that too. We didn't really go in order.
Okay. We'll get into the rest of our win totals plus our thoughts on USC's candidates next.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Oh, yeah, the internet might be struggling, but I had to find a way. I had to put together cables to let you know about the incredible opportunity that you have with Mint Mobile. That is the excitement that I have for Mint Mobile, because after years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by big wireless providers, if we've learned anything, it's that there's always a catch. So when we first heard that Mint Mobile offers premium wireless service starting at just $15 a month, I thought, what was the catch? But after finding out a little bit more about Mint Mobile and the service, there really isn't one. See, Mint Mobile's secret sauce is they're the first company to sell wireless service online only. By cutting out the retail stores, there's no crazy overhead costs that get passed down to you in the form of all these mystery fees. Instead, Mint just passes on those sweet, sweet, minty savings direct to you. It's a great opportunity where you're going to be able to, if you want to switch to Mint Mobile, I mean, those plans are just $15 a month. And if you're not 100% satisfied, Mint Mobile has you covered with their 7-day money back guarantee. You can use your own phone. You can keep your same number along with all of your existing contacts. All plans come with unlimited talk and text plus high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. To get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month and get the plan shipped directly to your door for free, go to mintmobile.com/cover3. That's mintmobile.com/cover3. MintMobile. Mintmobile.com/cover3. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/cover3. Come on, Mint Mobile. I got your read in. The internet held together for your Mint Mobile read. So at least we've gotten that taken care of. All right. So, what's on the top of y'all's mind from the win totals lock dock so far that we haven't gotten to?
I would like to ask you about your Ohio State over 11.
Oh, I'm in trouble. I'm in a lot of trouble. I think the inconsistencies that we've seen throughout eight quarters, where if you put, I don't even know if you can put like an entire four quarter combination together for what I thought Ohio State was going to be. It's almost like I have to take individual drives. I have to nitpick on like a very specific level, maybe even on individual throws from our quarterback, CJ Stroud. If among eight quarters, I take the very best plays, I might be able to string together, I don't know, because like, I mean, they've had to throw the ball so many times. They've had so many plays in all these games. It's like, what's our play count for like an Iowa football game? Like 60, right?
Maybe. 60
to 65, maybe. Yeah, I can fill out an Iowa game's worth of Ohio State play that makes me feel like they're going to win all of the rest of their games. I think that the way that offense can sputter just a little bit, how a 3-and-out can torch a defense that we've already discussed its issues extensively. I think that this Ohio State team has me concerned that there could be another loss on the schedule. I said push insurance off the bat, and now I need that insurance claim to be able to cash, or else otherwise this Ohio State over is going to be very much in jeopardy.
Iowa, I think they're going to run the table. 62 plays per game.
Iowa run 62? So yeah, yeah. I was close. I mean, saying they're going to run, they're going to be favored. Do you have their sheet pulled up right now?
Hold on. Let's know what Bud just said. Favored, but Bud, give them the line.
I think they're going to run the table, man. I do. I think that they're going to do something about the defensive coaching staff right now. I think they
not Mark D'Antonio, though, right? We can clarify that.
I mean, who knows, I guess. But you know who's on that coaching staff as an analyst? Paul Rhodes.
Oh, yeah.
Who would you rather have coaching the defense, Kerry Combs or Paul Rhodes?
How does that work? Do you have to fire one to add the analyst to the staff? Like, because he still can't. I know.
Yeah, you have to have a vacancy to add the analyst to the staff. And I know this because, like, recruiting season, sometimes coaches want to send a really popular analyst on the road to go see guys, and you got to elevate him to a coaching spot for a little bit. So somebody would have to go or have some sort of illness or, you know, leave or something. But there's no rule against having a shadow DC in practice, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you've got to make the change.
It's a big shadow.
You've got to reassign the jobs, and you've got to have, you can't have like a one coach. I mean, listen, with zero college football playing experience, I will very quickly like seed this, but you can't have, to me, one voice playing the defensive coordinator on game day and someone else being like the shadow voice and the one who's actually leading the meetings and doing the game planning, right?
Now, the analyst, could the analyst still call the defensive plays from the booth? I don't know the rules on that.
Analyst,
I think there's headset issues. Are there rules about how many headsets you can have on game day?
Gotcha. Yes.
Yeah, Chip had too many headsets going earlier in the show.
Yes. I'm with Bud, though. I think, like, who else? The offense is still what we thought it was, right? I mean, the offense still has the firepower. Well, I mean,
I think the offense is perfectly fine. Yeah.
They put up 600 yards in the game. Granted, some of it was from behind, but I think the offense is fine. I think they can, while they iron out some of these issues on the defensive side of the ball, like, who presents the challenges? Penn State and Michigan. You have to go to Ann Arbor, which I think definitely looks a little bit trickier, but they've dominated that rivalry. Like, I'm more leaning towards Bud of, yeah, do we forget what happened in 2014 when they lost to a 7-6 Virginia Tech team and then ran the table and ran to the playoffs? Like, I think the more likely scenario is that they do kind of, maybe this is the wake-up call. Like, sometimes losses can be a good thing. Maybe this forced their hand to have to do some things defensively that, you know, Kerry Combs was really hesitant against. Maybe this is what it took to get Ryan Day to go in those meetings and say, this is not working. We need to disguise more. We need to pressure more. We need to show two highs and single high safety looks. Maybe that's part of the solution. And the good thing about it is the offense can cover up a lot of those issues while they iron them out.
A team we just talked about, Oregon. Who is more likely to make the playoff, Ohio State or Oregon?
Ohio State.
I think so too.
Yeah, but I think that's more based on perception than – but no, I mean – the one
that's because the college football playoff is a beauty contest, and if Ohio State is 11 or 12-1 Big Ten champs, then they're good.
If Oregon, like drops a game to like Utah or UCLA, they're gonna get hammered for it. Whereas Ohio State would get credit for only losing to Oregon. But I going to your concerns about the offense, Chip. Like, I get what you're saying, in that I do think they've been a little too pass heavy through two games. Like, they're running the ball well. They're averaging about 5.8 yards per carry, which isn't elite, but it's still, I think, top 20 in the nation. But they've only run the ball like 28 times per game, which is, you know, like last year they were rushing the ball over 40 times per game. So I think they could help CJ Stroud out a bit if they kind of had a bit more balance on offense, but I don't know if they're comfortable with their offensive line in the run game right now. So that's going to be an interesting thing to watch going forward too.
It's a little skewed because they've been playing from behind. You know, they had to throw it to come back faster. Other thing, it was interesting. You asked about, you know, who would you feel better about? Ohio State right now, 10-1 odds to win the national championship. Oregon, 15-1. So Vegas is in agreement on this too.
So I think the concern I have with Ohio State's offense, and it's a very minor one, but maybe this is what Chip's getting at. Chip, tell me if you agree or not. Is they're a little bit over-reliant on explosive plays right now, and their success rate numbers are not quite what you would think about with like a crazy lead offense. They're just so explosive that it covers it up. And we saw that a little bit against Oregon, right? Some of their third and fourth down struggles, they're still landing haymakers quite often. And against the vast majority of teams they play, it's not going to work. They just their jab game needs to kind of round into form.
I think that is absolutely, when I use the word inconsistent and when I say if I cut and paste my favorite Ohio State plays together, you're like, wow, this supercut is incredible. But the experience of watching the games, you just see some nothing burger drives and you're like, man, you really, really missed out on an opportunity. You know, based on this, maybe your defense did get a stop. And if you could have put together this long scoring drive, it kind of tilts the competition a little bit more in your favor.
When I was going to fantasy land, defense gets a stop.
I think the more comfortable Stroud gets, the better that'll get. Because I do think that the one of the things that have been missing that I saw through the first two games this year is, you know, Justin Fields, for as great as he was as a passer, was also very smart about when to run to pick up yards when things weren't, like, if maybe the passing, the big play was there in the passing game, but there was definitely a chance to pick up a first down with his legs. Justin Fields would take that chance to get the first down if it was there. I think Stroud at times is held down to the ball looking for the big play instead of maybe just picking up 5 yards and making it easier on second or third down.
That's a good call. Have we talked about Miami yet?
Yes.
Okay. That would be, I would say Miami's another team like that where their yards per play looks okay, but then you actually go through the experience of watching Miami play and it is very much coming in spurts. It's an interesting thing that I'm trying to look at within the, you know, college football this season in 2021. We talked about the explosive plays all offseason and how important it is for modern offenses, and you probably still end up winning more if you have explosive plays, and especially if you don't. But Bud, I guess for your, like, for the statistical analysis of it, we are seeing a lot of teams that are so committed and reliant on explosive plays that when they are not successful on sort of a down to down basis, one stat may look great, but within the context of a game, you feel like there's another step that they need to develop to. And again, it's week two, so I am willing to give college football teams the opportunity to improve throughout the season, but it's definitely one of my concerns about Miami as well.
They've always been a team that is, like, at least under Rhett Lashley, has been poor success rate wise and has done a good job with explosive plays. I will note, to Chip's point, like, monitoring this early in the season can yield value when it comes to the lock spot. There are, like, basically what we see is that success rate stabilizes quicker, right? So you can have really wild swings in your explosiveness, obviously, like, it's like one drop pass on a bomb through 2 weeks can really, you know, make or break your explosive rating. Explosive rating takes longer to stabilize. Like, we don't really know how explosive some of these teams are for a while. Pretty confident Ohio State is explosive, by the way, but for a lot of these, not. Success rate does stabilize more quickly because it's the sample set is bigger, right? I mean, a lot of these guys have run, you know, 140 plays already.
All right. Who else to Northwestern under 6.5?
I mean, how you feeling?
Good.
I feel like they're going to make a bowl.
You feel like they're going to make it to a bowl, but they won't hit 7 wins.
No, missable. I think they're going 5-7.
Yeah.
How are you feeling about your Iowa under, Chip?
Bad. Capital B, bad. You know, we spend all that time on Upon Further Review Monday's episode, you know, discussing whether Iowa should be 5th or 7th. You know, we didn't spend any time wondering if Ohio State's going to win. I mean, if Iowa's going to win 7 games, like if I was going to be some like 8-4 middle of the Big Ten team. I mean, maybe, but I think that the rest of the Big Ten West has set up such that I don't see anything major. Danny, what about your Louisiana under? Did you hit that?
I feel better about it. No, we didn't. I was going to hit on Bud and I's Iowa State under, because you got to feel a lot better about that with the question marks at quarterback now. Brock Purdy's thrown 3 interceptions 3 times in the last 8 games. He is an issue. Like, it's a problem for Iowa State, and Breece Hall suffering for it. Like, the teams are loading up and daring you, saying, go ahead, beat us on the outside. And
they can't.
They're not, and they can't. So that's an issue. I feel really good about the Iowa State under at this point.
Sorry, Danny. My bad.
No, go ahead.
Did you guys watch the live Q&A yesterday? Mm-hmm. So I invented a new term. It's called Jag Plus. It's like when a quarterback is just like a guy plus, right? It's like, okay, it's when a quarterback, when I don't want to like say like he's like no doubt really good or good, but we acknowledge that he's better than like just a random guy in there. So like Charlie Brewer, Brock Purdy, you know, guys who get way too much credit for a team win, but actually, like, you know, if you look at their actual skills, maybe can't carry a team by themselves. I begin to think Brock Purdy's kind of Jag plus.
I mean,
maybe that's mean.
Is this like on an OPS plus schedule? Like
no, 100 will be average. No, it's not scaled. No, no. I'm just saying, like, the plus here.
Brock Purdy's like a 102.
Yeah. is Devin Leary a Jag plus?
He might be. I might be really wrong on that one.
I know. We'll see.
Sucks.
That was a. Go ahead, Don.
I was going to say, one of mine that I am kind of worried about after this weekend, because I was kind of counting on it as being one of the wins. I'm worried about my Mizzou over 7 at this point. I think that Kentucky game was important for them to get to 8. I think I'm very much in push territory now at best. And my Mississippi State under 6 hasn't changed. It's the same thing as when we were talking about NC State. That was kind of already baked into my formula. So,
but Mizzou gets a Boston College that doesn't have Phil Dracovic.
True, but still, I think getting to 8 became a lot more difficult by losing to Kentucky.
That's true.
Mizzou, unless Haynes King makes it back by October 16th, which is kind of right on that questionable borderline,
maybe
they're going to play Boston College and A&M without their starting quarterbacks. And Tennessee still doesn't know who his starting quarterback is. So you may rack up some wins here pretty quick, Tom.
Well, they're looking for their starting quarterback, but Joe Milton keeps overthrowing him by 20 yards.
That skill set gets coaches fired. I tell you, I don't want to spoil anything for Lockspot. Could Memphis beat Mississippi State this weekend?
Yes.
I think so too.
I mean, it's a 3-point spread and a potential letdown spot and a rivalry game at Memphis.
Although, sure. How much home field advantage do you give Memphis for that one? Because it's fairly easy for Mississippi State fans to travel up there.
Yeah,
I made it neutral site.
Yeah.
So I would argue that for Memphis, you could factor in, like, you could probably keep a home field advantage if only for like a Super Bowl factor.
Sure.
Biggest game in Memphis this season. Mississippi State coming to town, getting
What's
fired
the
up.
Total in that game? It's got to be in the 70s, right?
64, 63 and a half.
I kind of like the over on that one. I think you could see this one go back and forth a little bit. I don't think Memphis just gave up 50 to Arkansas State, and I like their quarterback Hannigan. I think he could have some success against Mississippi State. I don't know. We're getting early in the locks pod.
Mississippi State's got some dogs.
Yeah.
You got some dogs on defense. Fired up. All right. Any others from the apologies to the listeners and to my esteemed co-hosts here. Any other from the win totals before we just kick it around real quick on the future of the USC football program?
I have my biggest miss.
What's that?
NIU, Northern Illinois.
I was about to ask you. Yeah.
I really thought they were going to be really bad this year, and they would have a coaching change, and all credit to Thomas Hammack and his staff. Like, they look a lot better. That's a program in the MAC that actually has kind of annual expectations. They're not one of these like that is just happy to be good every couple of years. And like, I really thought that was going to be like a 2 or 3 win team, and they go out, they beat Georgia Tech on the road. I know maybe a little fluky, but they hang tough at home against Wyoming. They might make a bowl game now. Really miss on this one.
Go ahead, Danny.
Well, I was going to say, do you got anything else? I got one more on one of mine that I'm going to be celebrating in over 7.5 in 8 weeks.
Michigan.
Yeah. Nice.
Michigan.
Feeling a little better about that one. Now, granted, Washington wasn't the challenge that you thought it was going to be. The style which we're playing, quarterback looks solidified, defense, they're getting more physical, finding a running back, like all these things that you think of identity, that you think of with Harbaugh, some of the teams on their schedule. I feel real. I'm joking about the 8-0 start, but I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. I think this is one of the easier slam dunks with the 7.5 going over the total.
I mean, there's a principle there, I think, that we should remember for next year.
What's that?
Like, figure out where the bottom is, and traditionally, like, do not bet the under on really historic programs that recruit really well, or don't bet the under on these programs that recruit super well when the under is like the lowest it's been in years. You know what I mean? Because there are always going to be some kind of talent upside. Like,
unless last it's Florida State.
Yeah.
Did I say that out loud?
Well, I mean, they might win 2 games. So
I don't know. I'm not giving up on them. There was a game I called Bobby Bowden, I think it was his one of his last 2 years. They almost lost to Jacksonville State before. I was calling the game. They were down late in the fourth quarter. Kind of was a miraculous comeback. The fact that they won was more of a miracle. So, like, it's an awful, devastating
loss. Was it the rain game?
Yes. Yeah. Ugly weather. It was gross.
Nigel Bradham gets that interception.
Yep.
And otherwise they were going to go down two scores.
Yeah. So, like, it's not like the – I mean, it sucks, and it's the worst loss in history. But I still believe the team's going to fight. I still think they're weeding out stuff. And when guys are quitting because they don't want to run their gassers due to punishment – which is what's supposedly happened with one of the offensive linemen that's left the program.
We're fighting a strength coach.
Yeah, you're still weeding out some issues there for Mike Norvell. It's a setback, but it's still a foundational year.
There's a couple guys that I do think if they drop more games, Norvell will just say peace. Mm. Like, there's certain guys they have to play right now.
Yeah.
Who they're still hoping will get with the program.
Yeah.
Dudes that, you know, Willie or Jimbo recruited, and if they drop a couple more here, I think you're going to see a lot of
youth movement
there. Yeah. In the secondary. Let me see. I had another one I felt bad about. Kind of sweating Texas over 7.5.
Kind of sweating Texas over 7.5.
A little bit. Yeah.
I don't see enough from the middle of the Big 12, especially if Kansas State loses Skylar Thompson. Oklahoma State has half of a quarterback. Like, TCU has looked probably like we were pretty optimistic on TCU, and I wouldn't say that they've exceeded expectations.
Did you see what TCU did in that game?
In which way?
They gave up, like, I think they had passes allowed of 80, 75, like 61, 44, and like 45 in the first 20 minutes.
Right.
And won.
Yeah.
I was like, how do you blow that many coverages in 20 minutes? That is really impressive. And then they didn't allow a damn thing the rest of the game. It was that was wild. Sorry.
I mean, it was TCU's defense getting its first, like, you know, first little look out there. Chase Garbers decided to dice him up a little.
That's what I'm telling myself about the Bears.
All right. So the news broke on Monday after we got done recording our episode. Bud jumped on and ran through a lot of the candidates, sort of where USC is, the future of recruiting, why things went poorly for Clay Helton. And so now I want to open it up to the entire group, because our position for any midseason firing is always very complicated, because there are going to be sitting head coaches, especially for a good job like this, whose names are mentioned. And many of them not only are I truly believe, like, focused on their season, you know, and trying to get to the next game. But how about this week in particular are in, like, two of the four biggest games of the season, with Luke Fickell leading Cincinnati on the road to Indiana, with James Franklin and Penn State hosting Auburn in a whiteout scenario. College football insider extraordinaire Dan Patrick is already on his radio show reading his text messages on air, saying there is, quote, mutual interest.
You think?
No shit. Really? Coaches are interested in the USC job?
And so Dennis Dodd turned the attention on a pair of former head coaches who are not working right now, Bob Stoops and Chris Peterson. Before we get this conversation started, the note that I would put for both of those is they are working for Fox Sports, which is based where? In LA. Los Angeles. This is a very, very easy move. If USC wants to do it, it would not be my move if I was the USC athletic director. But how do we see this search playing out? Do you want to play fantasy athletic director and make a suggestion to Mike Bone? I'm just curious to hear where everybody's thoughts are for a process that will continue for literally months, probably, before we get a resolution.
I'm not hiring Chris Peterson. And I think Chris Peterson's a very good football coach, but Chris Peterson is more of what you've already had. Like I wrote on Monday, USC needs somebody who knows how to go get the talent and bring all the talent and brings that kind of SEC kind of national title recruiting acumen to the program. That's not Chris Peterson. That's one of the reasons Peterson's gone and they brought in Jimmy Lake, because they were sick of the OKGs. They wanted to bring in more of the 4 and 5 high rated guys. That hasn't worked too well to this point, but still, I don't think Chris Peterson's right for USC. I think we've talked about it a number of times. I don't know who specifically it should be. I think there's a very narrow candidate list of who those guys are that I think would fit well there.
Tom, I have a little bit different take on Peterson, but we're going to get to the same place. Like, I don't think Washington was tired of Peterson. I think Peterson
was tired. Yeah,
was tired of the recruiting game. And at USC, it's not acceptable to not play the recruiting game. Like, you have to understand what recruiting at the highest levels entails, and you have to be okay with it. Like, I think a lot of things Peterson did were what USC needs. They need more physicality. They need better attention to detail. They need, you know, little things to be taken care of behind the scenes to be more buttoned up. And Clay Helton didn't have all that. But you can't throw the guy in there who's not going to recruit, you know. And it's like, look, we're better now. And you know, ask Florida how that's going, right?
I mean, like, that's going to be great for a bunch of 9-3, 10-2 seasons where you get to the Rose Bowl, but you're never going to the playoff.
Can I ask you something about recruiting in general? Because it was one of the reasons I didn't want to get in coaching. It takes up a ton of time, a lot of equity, a lot of ass kissing. Like, you, and I like could not do that for 17 and 18 year olds. Like, tell them how great they are, and like, hey, come, like, kiss their. I've seen it in person, and sometimes I'm like, oh, that's what you have to do, and it's like, ugh. NIL. How much could that change the game for a guy like Chris Peterson, who maybe doesn't like going on the road? A Bob Stoops, who has a part of the game that he didn't like, where all of a sudden, yeah, you got to put in some phone calls, you got to work, and you maybe have to go see a player, but you don't have to call him four times a day. You don't have to, you know, make sure you're texting him and, you know, checking in on him every single day. It's, here's the bag, it's secured, and it's legit, it's above board. Because I think that was a big reason why USC is where they are, because they got busted. Reggie Bush gets in trouble. They say, oh, this is an embarrassment. We're going to do things the right way. Well, how's that working out? Like, they lost a lot of talent because other teams were saying, no, we'll go ahead. We'll do it. We'll do it the way we've been doing it forever. We'll take that talent. So I just wonder if any coach that's out there that's a former coach that maybe wasn't too into the recruiting would see this as an opportunity to say, you know what? It's not going to be quite the same recruiting game it's always been. Now, definitely, you still have to, like, even in free agency, the NFL, you still get wined and dined, and you want to see a relationship. But I just wonder if it's going to change to where you don't have to hold their hand from start to finish, all the way across the finish line. And there's always the chance you get undercut, you know, or bought out. You know, somebody comes up with a bigger offer. But I just wonder if it's maybe more attractive to some of these coaches who weren't into the recruiting process as much.
I have no idea how that's going to impact it. I think that that's an interesting idea where it could maybe ease a lot of the workload, but I think there's also a possibility it could add more. But I do think, like, NIL and USC in particular, I think USC could really benefit from the NIL thing, because the fact is, you know, like, if you look at Instagram, like, all the Instagram influencers, the ones who got the millions of followers and they get a ton of money, where they all live?
LA and Southern, Miami.
Yeah. And you're in the entertainment capital of the country, and there's tons of those opportunities there. And like, that's where every single agent in the world practically lives. So there's tons of NIL opportunities that I think USC could look to take advantage of with their new head coach. But I do think that whoever it is has to just be 100% hard, you know, coach speak, 110% committed to getting that talent.
I think it's going to be Franklin. I think that's who the, I think they kind
I of, hear he has mutual interest.
You think? I just feel like it's sort of, you just, it's like they deserve each other almost. Like, Franklin, I think he's showing a little bit of desperation by having these rumors float out there. I think he's always kind of looked at Penn State. I think he's tired of playing second fiddle to Ohio State. There's an opportunity. I think he kind of feels like an LA coach, and they're into that star power. I think he would love nothing more than to go on Jimmy Kimmel and go on every show and to have the TikTok stars out of practice, and he could do a little dance with them. I think he would eat that up. He's incredible on the recruiting trail. I think he would crush it out there. I think he could kind of try to own California. You know, I definitely question some of his coaching acumen, but you get some good coordinators underneath him. I think it just feels like this might be the inevitable move that's made.
I will say that if James Franklin does end up getting the USC job, he better start landing the damn top quarterbacks, considering they're all going to be living within 20 miles of his own campus.
Well, they have 2023 star Malachi Nelson are already committed. So, like, assuming he doesn't bounce, this guy's got, they already have two of our top four players in the country committed, I think, for 23. Like, I think Franklin would be a great fit. The guy just wins games.
Yeah.
In some difficult spots. He's the only coach to win at Vandy in any of our lifetimes, pretty much.
Yeah.
He took over a very difficult
spot. So far.
Yeah, correct. Exactly. He took over a really difficult spot at Penn State after, you know, they were going through some of the sanctions stuff. And I wonder if he's really appreciated at Penn State. I think there's a lot of like the kind of existing, weirdos, but like just, you know, Joe Pa folks and just like people who I think there's some thought there in the industry that he's not really all that appreciated at Penn State.
My point, I think it was yesterday on CBS Sports HQ, is that the way that he can be the face of a program, the way that he understands the branding, the marketing, like he took Penn State out of the Joe Pa scandal and the Sandusky scandal. Like he was able to move it in a way that very compared to what happened, like that, like we probably should have lingered longer, but he was just like such a force and he was able to engage that Penn State community and be able to like push this whole thing forward. Like USC should look at that and look at the Vanderbilt success, like you mentioned, and say, you know, if we want to forget the Clay Helton era, go get James Franklin. He will make you like forget, because he is just such a star, to your point, that he can take up a lot of oxygen. And I think that that's what you want, is to give USC fans and that whole community the idea that this is without a doubt a new era. The page has been turned and it starts, you know, right here with at the introductory press conference, which of course James Franklin's going to win.
I think who he wants out, because I think he checked out the moment they won the Big Ten, beat Ohio State, and didn't even sniff the playoffs. I was one of the only ones I remember getting into with Herbstreit. Like, why aren't we even discussing Penn State as an option for the playoffs? Well, they lost twice. Well, who'd they beat? They beat Ohio State and won the Big Ten championship. I think that was the minute he probably realized, oh, like, I'm not. There's a lot more to this. There's optics. There's, you know, history. There's, you know, style points and all this. And I have to go up against that every single year. So, like, when I say he's desperate to get out of there, I think there's a number of reasons why. Talking about not that appreciated, I think there's legitimate reasons why he would want to leave Penn State.
I think it might have been during the 2020 season when he coached away from his family. Like, whatever doubts you had or whatever frustrations you had, as his family was in Florida because of an immune-compromised daughter, I believe it is. Like, what... if you're just sitting all alone, going through the grind and like quarantined and going through the, and as poorly as the Penn State season went last year and all the bad breaks that they had, what, any negative thoughts that you've got about that job or that setting, it would not surprise me if they were exacerbated by the fact that he was away from his family for the whole year.
I think we've mentioned this before on here when we've like speculated about the USC kick, but it is funny and it is true. I feel like a perfect candidate would be Lane Kiffin. It's just because he's a much better head coach now than he was when he first got the USC job, and he brings the same kind of approach. But I think of other candidates out there. I think Luke Fickell brings a lot of what you want. Like Bud, you were mentioning the physicality. I think Fickell would definitely bring that back to USC. He obviously focused on recruiting. I think he would do that. It's just all the other stuff, like you were mentioning, like having the TikTok stars and being on Jimmy Kimmel. I don't think that's up Luke Fickell's alley. I don't think he'd be interested in that. I don't think Luke Fickell really, I don't know how interested he is. I know he's got the history with Mike Bohm, but I don't know how interested he's going to be in uprooting his entire family from Ohio, where they've lived their entire lives, and moving them to the West Coast. So I don't know if that's going to play.
Why not Lane Kiffin? If
history,
if Jennifer Lopez can get back with Ben Affleck, why can't Lane Kiffin go back?
That's about true love, Danny. That's right? Not about nobody's been paying attention to us lately. That's just true love.
But I mean, how
Jordan
many
clip that,
right? How many marriages have we seen fall apart? And you're like, that was the nastiest divorce you've ever seen. And then give it some time. And then they fall back in love and they walk off ride off into the sunset together. Why can't it work?
Just, I mean, the rationale's there, right? It's like Lane wasn't mature enough for us at the time. He's really changed now. I mean, that's
right. I mean, if you want the best offensive mind out there, he would embrace. I mean, you talk about LA, what they're looking for. Give me the sunglasses. Give me the long. You let his hair grow out a little bit longer. He's still got that sun bleached hair. Like
he's in good shape now.
Yeah, he's there. He's got history. Like they always want a USC guy. Yeah, I think you could mend those fences.
Photos do you of want Lane to see a play and Traveler on a yacht together. Yeah, that's the thing. I don't know what defensively that could be, but I think that if they're able to at USC, I feel like Lane Kiffin would be able to recruit the kind of defensive talent to where they could still be solid there. But I honestly, I think that's a I think it's a good candidate. And if you can get past the history, I think it would make a lot of sense. Another name that's come up that I don't think would get, I wonder what the reaction would be, but this is the one coach that I feel like reminds me the most of a young Pete Carroll as far as just the energy that they bring. PJ Fleck.
He's on the odds board. I don't know how much value we put in the odds boards as they are, you know, put together on September 14th or whatever. But PJ Fleck was higher on the betting odds board yesterday than I was giving him a shot when I started putting together my handful of candidates.
But I mean, like,
could happen for sure.
Because I think that he would bring a more physical style of offense, kind of like what Pete Carroll always loved to do. And I think he's got that same kind of, let's go, you know, kind of rah-rah energy 24-7 that Pete Carroll had that I think plays well in Southern California, at least better than it does in maybe some other places around the country. So I think that I don't think he's at the top of the list, but I do think he is a name to be considered. Yes.
Don't
lose to Colorado this weekend.
Don't lose to Colorado.
Does he keep the tie with the pullover? I don't think you can do that in the Coliseum. That's not the same as doing it at Western Michigan or at Minnesota.
I don't know. I mean, it has been getting hotter in Southern California. There's not as many 68 degree days. There's a lot more 88 degree days. So you might be onto something there.
You can row that boat out in the Pacific.
Yes.
You can row in the Pacific because it is called the Pacific because it is calmer than the Atlantic.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Hmm. I don't think I knew that.
Is that true?
That's why. Wow. Calmer waters are in the Pacific. Not everywhere, but for by and large, if you ever sail across the Atlantic and sail across the Pacific, you'll notice a difference.
Well, we don't need to even talk about sailing. We can just talk about something that three of us know very well, which is where all the hurricanes come from. And the hurricanes come from the Atlantic. And they come.
They're called tsunamis and typhoons in the Pacific. They just have different names. They still have them.
All right. Coming up on Thursday, 11 a.m. Eastern time, it will be Week 3 Locks Live. You can join us at youtube.com/cover3. And if you are a subscriber, you will get the Locks Pod at the normal time, right around your lunch break, hopefully, to be able to get you all set for the college football weekend ahead. You can follow him on Twitter at BudElliott3. You can follow him at Tom Fernell. You can follow him at Danny Cannell. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.